Welcome to Security Wire Weekly, a CertSecurity.com podcast for April 8th, 2009. Welcome to the program. I'm Rob Westerveld. In this edition, we'll talk with Jim Rivas of the Cloud Security Alliance. It's a new organization that's going to launch at the RSA conference.
We're trying to provide broad, comprehensive guidance for organizations, and you just can't pick one thing and say encryption's the important thing, or it's just compliance.
Also, a lot of data breach class action lawsuits are being thrown out of court. Attorney David Goldstone of Goodwin Procter joins us.
The courts have pretty consistently found that the increased risk of a data breach by itself is not enough.
Well, thanks for joining us. Jim Rivas is founder of the Cloud Security Alliance. It's a new organization that's going to address security issues around cloud computing. And if you use SaaS providers like Salesforce.com or Qualys, or you are considering virtual servers, such as those hosted by third-party providers, Amazon.com, even Microsoft's Azure platform. Well, you probably are taking a look at some of the security issues around using those third-party providers. That's one of the aims of the Cloud Security Alliance. Joining me is Jim Rivas. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rob, for having me.
Cloud computing is starting to be used in a lot more as a marketing term. We're hearing about it all over the place now from different vendors. What's your definition of cloud computing, and where does it fit in with the virtualization technology?
Well, cloud computing is, in my view, an on-demand usage of information technology delivered to the customer as a subscription-based service. And so the customer is really not aware, and a lot of the inner workings of these shared resources are fairly opaque to them. Now, virtualization and the ability to use the technology, and you primarily think of this as the operating system, to basically abstract the operating system from the hardware itself, is a component of how cloud computing may be delivered to the customer, because it provides an efficiency where a cloud provider, for example, could have 10 machines out there but be providing 20 different versions of or instances of Linux and some instances of Microsoft Windows and things like that. So it's an enabling technology that makes the business model work, but the actual on-demand provisioning and the service that's provided to the customer, they actually don't know that virtualization there. It's just sort of something that's inside that's making it work and making it efficient.
I see. So this is really, you know, about organizations trusting third-party service providers, whether they be traditional SaaS providers or even fully internet-based virtual servers.
Well, it is and it isn't, and that's actually part of what we're trying to work through and figure out. So NIST is an organization that has made some announcements as well that they're working on providing some standards and guidance for securing cloud computing, and they're working through a definition. And we are as well, and we have Chris Hoff, who you may know, who's been going back and forth, and we have some very similar definitions that we're trying to work through that provide this in a little more detail. But we're not necessarily talking about some sort of a hosted service where it's all dedicated hardware and it could be dedicated data communication lines and everything else, but it is provided to customers as a service. We're talking about more specifically when you're using these shared resources like virtualization that actually create new architectural issues where, for example, you've got multiple customers' data that's hosted on some type of shared resource. And because we don't necessarily have all the physical controls that we had in the past, that we need to have another layer of virtualized and cloud-specific security controls and standards for how we provision customers and things like that. So it's not necessarily every on-demand shared service model of computing going back to, that's how a lot of mainframe computing started out. Not everybody could afford a mainframe computer, but it's actually looking at how does some combination of all these different technologies that actually dump my data in with maybe my competitor's data and it's putting it in a different country, how do we manage through all those issues from a business, legal, policy, and technical perspective?
Now, there's a lot of different organizations working on different standards for different parts of the cloud, right? You've got the web services specifications, and then you've got organizations opening up their APIs. So is the Cloud Computing Alliance going to sort of step away from that?
Very much so. So the Cloud Security Alliance, what you can think of us is trying to be sort of this general contractor, big picture perspective of all the pieces out there that make for solid governance, risk management, technology mitigation of security issues in cloud computing. So we don't want to take all of this ourselves, but we want to look at what are all of the different organizations out there that can provide a piece of this, whether it's the groups that are focused on web security, it's the groups that are focused on compliance audit, it's the groups that are focused on interoperability. And what we want to do is we want to sort of roll that all up into a comprehensive picture viewpoint of all of the issues that a chief information officer or a chief information security officer, for example, can look at and say, okay, here's a comprehensive framework of how I need to be thinking about, from an architectural perspective, from a governance perspective, how I engage with cloud providers, because it's going to be multiple providers. It's going to be heterogeneous, and maybe I have a private cloud, maybe I have a public cloud. How I make that all work together and mitigate my risks and enable my business. So we don't see ourselves as taking any piece of what a Cloud Computing Interoperability Forum or an OWASP or an ISACA or a Jericho Forum is doing. They're all doing good things, but we want to roll that all up and provide the practitioner point of view, which often gets lost when you have a lot of vendors and a lot of competition. We forget about what does the security practitioner need and what do they need to do in order to provide assurance for their corporate entities. So that's really what we're focused on.
Obviously, the website shows that there are vendors that are signing on to support the alliance. Will it also delve into lobbying, or will you remain purely an education organization?
I don't see us doing direct lobbying itself, but I do think that there is this gray area of overlap where we want to provide guidance, and we want some of that guidance to be things that are common sense and are certainly going to resonate from a regulatory perspective. So, for example, it really seems as though cloud providers who are trying to serve lots of different customers in lots of different geographical regions and regulatory boundaries, it seems to make sense that we have fewer, not more, data breach laws. And it seems as though having 50 states in the United States, for example, with their own data breach legislation is probably not conducive to the efficiencies that we are trying to get. And so many of those laws are very similar. So I don't think you'll see us directly lobbying for specific legislation, but I think you can expect us to be making statements like that and where we see efficiencies that can be gained by us getting more on the same page and finding best practices in law that fit across multiple boundaries, that we won't hesitate to make those statements.
Will the organization look into compliance issues and delve into, you know, can a company really be compliant if it's utilizing some form of cloud computing with sensitive information?
I think what we will absolutely do is help the people who are doing the IT audits in sort of bridging this gap between what are the standards, either regulatory or best practices or ISO standards, that relate to any sort of best practice, and how does this business model impact that, and let's find new ways of being able to say yes or no, this is a compliant system for managing this sensitive data if you have these mitigating controls. It's all about having the proper level of mitigating controls. And when you move some business applications in the cloud, for example, then you need to have a different set of mitigating controls. Maybe you need encryption in certain cases to provide assurance that the data is protected. Maybe you need strong authentication, two-factor authentication. Maybe you need to combine those sorts of things. Maybe there's something else that needs to happen. But basically, we will get involved in providing guidance on what we think something is compliant with by trying to have some sort of a level playing field from a risk perspective with, if you had all this information in your organization, what are the risks? The risks are different, but coming up with a common risk baseline to help guide compliance is certainly the sort of thing we will be advocating and working with the groups out there, like the ISACAs of the world, to help get broad buy-in for that sort of thing.
One thing I haven't heard yet is there a priority list that you guys have? I mean, can you prioritize some of these security challenges?
Well, we have defined for our initial paper these 15 domains, which it's pretty broad and it's pretty ambitious. But again, we're trying to provide broad, comprehensive guidance for organizations. And you just can't pick one thing and say encryption's the important thing, or it's just compliance. But within all the different domains that we have, identity management and physical security of cloud premises and all these things, we are going to try and look at what are the near-term issues in each of them and prioritize those things. Here are the risks you need to worry about today because your business is doing this today or it's got plans to do so in the next 12 months. So we are going to try and boil this down into a prioritized list and then say, for the good of the industry in the future, here's some research areas we need to go get a little more definition around. Here's some projects that we all need to work on jointly, not just the Cloud Security Alliance, but other places. But at this point, it just doesn't seem as though we can take a serialized approach and, hey, let's start with web security, then let's go to virtualization. We've got to sort of work on all these at once and just go through and find the important low-hanging fruit sorts of issues that we can solve soon. So that's why we need a lot of help, and we need more and more volunteers, and it's exciting, but it's definitely a lot of work.
Sure, and that paper will be out at RSA. It's called Guidance for Critical Areas of Focus in Cloud Computing. And you told me offline that it's not going to be just, you know, a 3 or 4 page document. This is going to be some pretty weighty information in there. It's going to be a decent paper, technical paper.
Yeah, it's going to be good bedstand reading material for sure. We think it's going to be several pages for each domain, and we have 15 domains. And so there's going to be plenty of there to read. I think there's going to be some value that people who have been focused and looking at this issue for quite some time are going to find some interesting ideas. So there's going to be a lot there. We're not claiming that this is going to be the end-all, be-all. This is going to be the start. This is going to provide some information and define a lot more work that we all need to work together on.
Well, Jim Rivas of the Cloud Security Alliance, thanks very much.
Thank you, Rob.
Up next, David Goldstone joins us. He's with an attorney with Goodwin Procter, and he talks about how a lot of class action lawsuits, well, nearly all of them, have been thrown out of court. David is being interviewed by SearchSecurity.com's Neil Reuter.
This is Neil Reuter at Secure World Boston for SearchSecurity.com. I'm speaking to David Goldstone. David is a partner in the intellectual property and white-collar crime and government investigative practices for Boston-based Goodwin Proctor. David is also a former federal prosecutor. David, there have been several legal cases involving data breaches that have been dismissed. Can you explain the grounds why these are dismissed and why they've been unsuccessful?
Sure, Neil. There's been a trend that we've seen in a number of courts across the country, from the District of Columbia to Ohio and New York and a number of other courts, where after there's a consumer data breach and personal information is disclosed to unauthorized parties, consumer class actions are brought against the company that was hacked into. Consistently in those cases have been dismissed. The reason for the dismissal has generally been that the courts have found no injury from just a data breach. The plaintiffs in those cases have argued repeatedly that the injury is that there's an increased risk of identity theft. But the courts have pretty consistently rejected that theory thus far and found that the increased risk of a data breach by itself is not enough to support a legal case.
Do these cases now constitute a precedent for this type of action?
Yes, they do constitute a precedent. In those districts and in those courts, they would have stronger precedential weight than in other districts or courts where that court has not decided that issue. And of course, every case stands on its own facts, and usually there's ways to distinguish particular precedents with respect to new cases that come around the pike.
In some high-profile cases, TJX is a notable example, the company has moved ahead and settled with folks, offering cash, offering credit information, a lot of things to preempt, perhaps, the event of legal cases. Why do they do this when the cases have gone in favor of the defendants?
Did not represent TJX, and we were not one of the law firms in that case. So I don't know what their motivation was in settling that case, but there certainly was some theoretical exposure because each case, as I said, stands on its own facts. So the facts could be quite different. And maybe there were allegations of injury that would have carried the day in that case. But in any event, particularly given how high-profile cases that were, given that TJX had settled with the Federal Trade Commission and with Visa and MasterCard, no doubt one of their motivations was that they just wanted to put that episode behind them, and they had agreed to improve their security practices. So no doubt what they wanted to do was look going forward. And it's quite frequent in a litigation situation that companies, even though they have a meritorious legal case, might settle it in order to put all of the litigation behind them.
Well, that does it for this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts at our podcast landing page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest security news from our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westerveld. Have a great day.